Blog Talk Radio.
What are you doing up here? You been benched yet?
I have some real first in my professional career. I've been benched.
Why is that?
I won't fight.
Well, you could play if you fought.
All right, that's not going to work. Welcome back, everybody. It is the Third Man In Radio. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com, and it is Wednesday night. Oh, I should know this. It is Wednesday night, April the 20th, 2011, 8 o'clock here in Chicago, and alongside is my co-host, the superstar. How are you doing tonight, superstar?
I am outstanding. How are you? Long time no talk.
I know we didn't do a show last week. I hopped over there with the guys at Hockey Night, and I'm sure, being that it is Adolf Hitler's birthday, I'm sure Fork is down at the Loschitz Inn, and so sadly he couldn't return the favor and be here tonight. But we understand that he has other obligations on this celebratory day. If you're into that kind of thing, it is also 420, and I think you know what that stands for, superstar.
Yeah, I do.
I will see you later. But first, before we get to all that tonight, obviously four games in the books. Blackhawks down 3-1. We're going to talk about the game on Tuesday night, which I was unable to attend, long story. But Blackhawks did come back in a rather big way, a 7-2 victory. They were up 7-1 late. We'll talk a lot about that. I want to get into one complete buffoon, just a real idiot, on the Vancouver Canucks, and we're also do the same for the Blackhawks, a real lunkhead on the Blackhawks. We'll talk about those two guys. But first and foremost, superstar, the Blackhawks now 3-1 at this point. Coming into this series, did you expect to be here after game four?
You know, I kind of saw the series being 2-2 right now. I personally took Vancouver in six, which I don't think I'm out of the norm. I saw a lot of people with that prediction. And, you know, as much as being down 3-1 is disheartening, I think it's how they're down 3-1 is even more disheartening. You pushed around in game one, you really show no life, and, you know, kind of just go through the motions in that one, and you know, and even going into game two, I just started that game, I felt, oh, here we go again. They showed some signs of life as that game wore on, but, you know, you just realize where the series could have been if maybe they didn't have to play playoff hockey and use everything in the tank just to get in, where the series could be. So disheartening, but, you know, they did it to themselves, so. We'll see how it plays out.
Going into Tuesday night, Blackhawks down 3-0. Did you check adjust your impressions of the two teams? Did you expect it to be over on Tuesday night?
I did. I didn't think there was any way that they were going to come out and then, first of all, win that game, let alone in the fashion that they did. I fully expected us to be talking about a season recap tonight, so I'll have to change my bases a little bit tonight as well.
Yeah, you know, I picked the Blackhawks in six as well, or excuse me, Vancouver in six as well. But yeah, coming into game four, you would figure that the Blackhawks are too proud of a team that. You go through the first three games of the series and you don't have Kane, Sharp, Taves, or Hossa really on the scoreboard at all. And, you know, even now you come out of game four, who did all the damage last night? It was the Dave Bolin line. Patrick Sharp got a meaningless goal there at the end with Marian Hossa's only point of the series. So there's still that hope from a Blackhawks perspective in that you know, there's all these other guys that haven't really contributed in the series yet in a major way anyway on the scoreboard, and you think that they'd have to snap out of that funk. Now, looking at Jonathan Taves on the ice, something's wrong. Now, is he just completely gassed and doesn't have anything left in the tank? It's playoffs. I can understand that being an excuse, and I can let that slide during the regular season. I'm not saying that he's dogging it at all, I'm giving Jonathan Toews the benefit of the doubt. I think there's something wrong with him. And believe you me, the Blackhawks and their PR staff have the laundry list of excuses ready to go when this team gets eliminated. They'll all come out. But, you know, if Toews can't do it, what's your impression of Marian Hossa so far in this series? You know, he's got the 1 point. I thought he had a decent game one, but he's tailed off as the series was worn along. I mean, what's your kind of thought there?
I know what you're getting, and I think I'll even throw Patrick Kane in there. They just seem lost. They seem tired and almost expecting somebody else to come in and carry the load and, you know, give them a breather. But, yeah, they you mentioned the tape. I don't know if there's something wrong or they're trying to do too much, but, I mean, those two guys can't be absent. I did notice Hossa playing a little more physical on Tuesday. Obviously, he's not, the physical force that you're expecting other guys to be. You know, he's your scorer. He's here to score goals. But both those guys seem, like you mentioned earlier in the year, disinterested.
Well, Marian Hossa, that's a whole other discussion for another day. And I might as well throw it out there now. I don't think it's any secret. I think that at this stage, given what you've seen out of Marian Hossa, what he was before he came here, and the fact that by the time next year's playoffs rolls around, he'll be another year older. He'll be 33, which is not old. Actually, I think I should say it's not old. But he's got a lot of money, and he's got a lot of years left on that contract. If I was Dan Bowman, I'd be doing everything that in my power to get rid of Marian Hossa. Because you're going to want to keep Patrick Sharp. I think you take one look. I mean, what's the thing really that's separating the Vancouver Canucks and the Chicago Blackhawks right now? It's the defense. So the Blackhawks, they set that model. I mean, the Red Wings set the model, but the Blackhawks, played off of that last year with a deep six, at least a deep five, and then whether it was Hendry or Boynton at the sixth spot. Well, this year Vancouver's coming at you with six very credible defensemen who could play at least 20 minutes a night. Kevin Bieksa, we'll get more in him a little bit later. I know people want to talk about, or at least want to hear about Kevin Bieksa at the end of the game with Victor Stahlberg. Kevin Bieksa has been dominant in the series. I don't know about dominant.
He's been great.
He's been great in the series. Probably the biggest. When Edler didn't have a good game in game four, but Edler, Bieksa, and to a lesser extent, I think Christian Ehrhoff, they've been the difference makers from a Vancouver perspective. And, the Blackhawks, they've just got to keep, if they want to make this a series, they really have to keep at those defense. You have to challenge the other team's best players. That's the way you get it done in the playoffs. You can't sit around and wait for an opportunity. You have to. I mean, it's a north-south game. It's a north-south game all year long, but even more so in the playoffs. You got to chip the puck in. You got to make those defensemen pay, and you can't give them any time. And you got to hope that you're able to create turnovers. Case in point, Dave Bolin's goal last night. Michael Frolik gets in on the forecheck. It's a nice hustle play by Frolik. It's a good play, but that's what he's supposed to do. Dave Bolin makes the opportunity by being the second man in on the forecheck, anticipating that Tanner Glass is going to be under pressure, and he's going to do one of two things. He's either going to fire that thing forward around the backboards, or he's going to try a stupid backhanded pass up the boards behind him, and that's what he did, and Dave Bolin was right there being the second guy in, uncovered, and he picked up that pass, cruised into the slot, and, you know, puts a nice shot on an injured Roberto Luongo. You know, it's things like that that they have to keep doing. They have to make Vancouver make decisions skating backwards and turning. And under duress, with forecheck coming, you know, breathing down their neck, that's the only way the Blackhawks are going to get back into the series. That's the only way that Jonathan Toews is going to get on the board. That's the only way that Marian Hossa is going to get on the board. They have to continue to do that. And if they want to sit back and wait for turnovers in the neutral zone, they're not going to win the hockey game. It's just that simple. I think if four games in, if you were to tell me that the Blackhawks would have a victory, and the victory would have come from, you know, whether you want to call it the third or the fourth line, the second or third line, if you're calling it the second line, that means that Marian Hossa has dropped to your third, which is another indictment of Marian Hossa. But, Brian Bickle, Michael Frolik, and the return of Dave Bolin, and I don't know. It's still, to me, looking at Hossa's game, looking at Taves, whatever's wrong with him, I don't hold out much hope, but there's no question that Game 5 now becomes pivotal. Isn't a big enough word. Vancouver must win this hockey game. And I want to talk a little bit about Alain Vigneault in a second, but they absolutely must win this hockey game. They cannot come back to Chicago and, you know, give the Blackhawks any hope whatsoever, because the doubts are already there. They linger. This is what we talked about before the series started. When I was with Hockey Night, we talked about it here before. The Blackhawks did not want to see Vancouver in the first round because you'd rather see him in the second, because you want someone to plant that seed of doubt into Vancouver's head coming off of the President's Trophy. You want someone to plant that seed of doubt in their heads before they come to you. And that was the biggest problem that the Blackhawks had by putting themselves in that eighth spot, is that somebody else didn't have a chance to do what the Blackhawks did to Vancouver last night. And now we'll see how Vancouver responds. Now we'll get to see how Roberto Luongo responds, how Alain Vigneault responds. And, you know, do they win this game? This is what a championship team would do. You know, we can go back to game five of the Nashville series last year. Should the Blackhawks have won that game? Should Marian Hossa even been in the game to win that game in overtime? No, but they found a way to win that hockey game. Same thing holds true for Vancouver. If they're the real deal, they'll find a way to win game five at home. If they're not, it'll be back in Chicago in game six, and then you got a whole new series. What do you expect to see in game five tomorrow?
I don't know. You know what? The big thing you mentioned is the injured Roberto Luongo. How injured is he? Obviously, it affected him. There's no question that falling down and straining his back or whatever they're calling it had an effect. Because Hossa came out, get two pretty quick ones, and arguably those are shots that Roberto Luongo stops. Normally, I understand that the Campbell and the Keepel, weren't 70 footers, but those are goals that he stops. And they mentioned he's carrying his glove low. So I think the key, obviously, of the game is how hurt is he? Now, you got to remember the backup, Corey Schneider.
Yeah,
isn't exactly a throw-in. He's a solid backup goaltender. So is he Roberto Luongo? No, but you're not facing a Joey McDonald or an AHL goaltender if need be. I think you need to obviously build on the momentum. I think it comes down to how hurt Luongo is, and if the Hawks can jump on them early, opposed to getting jumped on early. I think whoever comes out of that first period ahead is going to win the game. So I don't know who that is, but That's my prediction. Whoever's winning at the end of the first period, I think, wins the game.
Yeah, I want to go back to you talk about Roberto Luongo. First, let's kind of go through the game a little bit, at least that first period, of course. I mean, you could tell from the very beginning that Vancouver was just not into the hockey game. They weren't engaged physically, and it appeared like emotionally. It looked like they didn't have their legs, and they were, I mean, you know, we could speculate a million reasons as to why. They just, the Vancouver Canucks that we saw in games 1 through 3 did not show up in game 4. There's no question about it. You just look at the first goal on the Brian Bickle goal. Now, you know, Brian Bickle did his best Keith Tkachuk impression there, and that's great. That's what we're asking of Brian Bickle. If Brian Bickle is going to be on this hockey team moving forward, because specifically or primarily due to his contract, okay. But what we saw out of him in game four, the drive to the net, going wide around Bieksa, we need to see more of that. Now, why did that happen? It's because the move itself wasn't very clean, and Kevin Bieksa was kind of confused by it. I can't crawl into BX's head, but the point is, you see on that play right there, if that was games 1, 2, or 3, Kevin Bieksa stands up and puts Brian Bickle on his ass. But it wasn't game 1, 2, or 3. It was game 4, and Bieksa just kind of stood there and let Brian Bickle skate around him. You know, and that kind of stuff was going on all night long. Now, you get out of the first period, if you're looking at it from either team's perspective, it's 1-1. But from a Vancouver perspective, and let's talk about Alain Vigneault. You got Roberto Luongo, who's obviously in some kind of pain after that first period. Back tightens up, whatever. Okay, they go in, and you know, let's just say there was a conversation. Luongo said he's fine. He wants to go back in. Fine. Okay. If I'm the coach, and I'm looking at my team though, and I'm noticing that my team just isn't engaged, I'm almost ready to pull that trigger on Luongo before we even hit the ice for the second period. Now, you go forward and you look that, you know, they give up 2 goals. I have the stat sheet right here. Vancouver gives up the Brian Campbell goal and the Duncan Keith goal 5 minutes and 30 seconds into the second game. It's into the second period. It's 3-1. I'm yanking Luongo right there. No more. Because if you look at both of those goals, the Campbell goal, Luongo's angle was horrible, and he never raises his glove. Campbell picks the far corner, or, you know, past the sliding Luongo. If he raises his glove 2 inches, he probably knocks it down. He doesn't raise it at all. It's 2-1. And then Duncan Keith, you know, he comes off the half wall. It's a nice play by Michael Frolik. Actually, Alexander Edler just kind of fell down. But still, again, Michael Frolik hustling, that's great. Keith comes back off the wall, cruises into the slot, slap shot, 3-1. I'm taking Luongo out right there because my team has no energy. I know that my goalie's hurt, and now we're down 3-1 in a game that if it gets away from us, there's no reason to subject my goaltender to this. And by the way that my team is playing, I have no reason to believe they're going to get back into it anyway. So just put Corey Schneider in the game. At worst, you keep losing the way that you are. At best, it sparks the team and you get back into it. You know, it's real easy, you know, for the Blackhawks, it's real easy to get confident about that game because, you know, Vancouver just didn't have any fight back. And it's a lot easier to play a hockey game when you're running in front and you're not being pushed at all. So we'll see what they have in game 5, but you know, and then, so the Hawks score 2 more goals, and then after the game, Roberto Luongo said that there was never any conversation about whether or not to take Luongo out. He, you know, nothing was ever said, so he just went out there. And then it appeared to me, after the 6-1 goal, that Luongo just took himself out.
Yeah, I wanted to ring up right as we're going through the timeline, him coming out. I was going to ask you, did you find it odd as far as when that happened. I mean, cause it wasn't 90% of the time, if a goalie's going to take himself out or he's going to get pulled, it's right after the goal. It's before the puck even goes back into play. And here, the puck went into play, and it wasn't until Campoli got hit in the Hawks zone that all of a sudden they look up, and there was a goalie checked. You know, it almost seemed like it was, hey, the entire building was looking down at the other side of the rink. Let's make the switch now. Maybe nobody will notice.
That's a theory, but okay, what plays into that theory? That Alain Vigneault is scared to death about breaking his goaltender's confidence. And in that mentality, he breaks it anyway. Because, you know, and you go back to the most famous incident in recent history anyway, quite a number of years ago, but Patrick Waugh. You know, his last game as a Montreal Canadian. It's like you're gonna leave your goaltender in for this. It's like the guys in front of him aren't playing. And then you see after the game, I mean, that's why, you know, Alain Vigneault really has opened the door here for the Blackhawks. Because, you know, you don't try to spark your team with a goalie change. You know, it was funny. I don't know if you saw the Versus, it was the Versus during the, I think it was during the first intermission of the L.A. and San Jose game. But Mike Keenan was there. And they asked Mike Keenan about, like, would he have pulled Roberto Luongo before the third period? And Mike Keenan laughed and said he would have pulled him long before that. It would never even have gotten to that point. I thought that was kind of funny. But, you know, you don't pull your goaltender. You're afraid to pull him on the road because he's going to get the raspberries from the crowd. And then you're going to try to sneak it during a scrum down at the other end. I don't know. That plays into that mentality that Vancouver's weak. You know, they're weak mentally. They're scared to death of what could happen, you know, to break Roberto Luongo's confidence, his psyche, and that they're scared of the Blackhawks. I mean, it plays into all of those theories. I don't know. The way it looked to me was that Luongo just said, "Screw this. I'm not. I don't know why I'm out here. I don't want to be out here." That's the way I read it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, as a coach, if you're worried about breaking the confidence and giving, you know, having the fans and the, you know, giving them hell and all this stuff, that's why you make the change during the intermission. You just have Schneider come out and start the period. You don't have to worry. Not that big of a deal. Yeah, it's, you know, probably still get the raspberries, but not nearly as bad as coming off during the play. So, you know, I doubt we'll ever hear what really transpired, but I agree. I think Luongo took himself out.
Yeah, and I just, I've mentioned this many times. I can't get behind the Vancouver Canucks as far as long-term going to win a Stanley Cup with Alain Vigneault as coach, because there's just too many things that this guy has shown over the years that just question, you know, that I would question whether or not that he can handle some of these things under pressure. Again, you're up 3-0 on the defending Stanley Cup champions. They get Dave Bolin back in the lineup, who's their obvious spark. You have a team that's weary, that's worn out, that's injured, and then the one guy that's been sitting on the sidelines for 6 weeks. Okay, some of those plays we talked about, the, you know, being the second back checker in, or the second forechecker in. You know, he moves over. He's anticipating that back pass off the wall. That's maybe that's a play that Jonathan Toews doesn't make because he's so damn worn out that he doesn't read that, you know, right away, and he doesn't take that extra step over there, or, you know, because he's tired and he's worried about not being able to get back to the middle if the puck were to go that way. Maybe that's a play that Jonathan Toews doesn't make. Maybe it is. But you've got a fresh Dave Bolin out there sparking the Blackhawks. After that third goal, I'm calling an end to it. If I'm Alain Vigneault, I'm switching goaltenders. I'm calling a timeout. I'm doing whatever I can to get my team back on track, to where even if I lose that hockey game and I'm still going back to Vancouver for game 5, I want to stall whatever momentum or crush whatever momentum that the Blackhawks have. And I want to get my team going in the right direction, going back to Game 5. Because now it's, again, you know, Vancouver could shrug this off and just say, oh, well, you know, we didn't compete. We know that we could do better and all that. But things happen in hockey games, and series swing completely based off of one little fluke thing, and all of a sudden, you know, if the Blackhawks hop up to a 1-2-0 lead early in Vancouver, especially if Luongo's in net, this is a whole different series. And, you know, because the Blackhawks have 3-4 periods of confidence that they've built because Alain Vigneault, the coach of the Vancouver Canucks, took Game 4 off. So, he better hope that his team comes out and you know, wants to end this thing and puts forward their best effort. Otherwise, he's going to be the one that looks stupid for taking Game 4 off, not taking Luongo out, not trying to refocus the troops, and finish that game strong. Because they were, again, in the third period, they had nothing. You know, you go into the third period, you're down 4 goals. At least play an even period, get a couple of goals, so you have confidence going back home. They didn't even do that. They wasted a game. They wasted a chance, an opportunity to sweep and go home and rest before a possible series with the Detroit Red Wings, who look like, I don't have the scoreboard in front of me, but who look like they're gonna end this thing in Phoenix tonight. So, I don't know. I'd be really upset today if I was a Vancouver Canucks fan. I'd be really upset, and I'd be concerned. Because, again, anything can happen. The Blackhawks could come out. They've got a bunch of guys that are due. And if everything goes right for the Blackhawks in Vancouver in Game 5, this thing comes back for a Game 6. That's a lot of momentum the Blackhawks are riding. They can win that game. Now, I don't think any of this is going to happen. But I'm just saying, from a Vancouver perspective, that's what I'm thinking about on the bench. And that's what I'd be thinking about. I'd be worried about my team if I was a Canucks fan, because, again, I can't trust my coach to manage his bench or his goaltender. It's ridiculous. He's a horrible coach. All right, I want to talk about some more things about Game 4, looking ahead to the rest of the series. I want to make a couple of things. A little bit later, we're going to go over our over-under bets that we made before the season. We're going to see who was smart and who wasn't. We looked at these at about the halfway point of the season, and I think some of them were pretty clear, others weren't. But we'll talk about it later. I also want to whenever the Blackhawks are eliminated, and I do believe it'll be this week, but whenever it happens, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to have Mike Peck, the voice of the Rockford IceHogs, is going to come on, and we're going to start talking more about the future of the Blackhawks, prospects that are coming up. I do want to point out, I did some sniffing around this week on Kyle Beach. I haven't written anything about it just because I didn't want to throw Kyle under the bus this time anyway. There is no, as best as I can tell, and from who, you know, the people that I've asked, there's no known issue that would have prevented, like, you know, let me be specific. There was nothing that Kyle Beach had to go home for or something that would have prevented him from being a Black Ace other than organizational decision. So I just wanted to put that out there. So it's just a little confirmation, again, that we talked about all year long, that Kyle has a lot to work on. And I think at this point, it's just the good thing is that the things that he has to work on are all on ice. You know, there isn't an issue with him at all off the ice. It's all on the ice. So I think if you're looking for a positive there, that's the positive. And, you know, we've been saying all year long that, you know, Beach is going to need another year in Rockford. So it's disappointing. It's kind of a slap in the face to Beach, especially since he was up for the cup run last year as a practice squad guy is essentially what those guys are. But I think it's a little overblown, but yeah, there should be some concern, but like I said, he's got another year in the minors left, so we'll see how that all plays out. The Rafi Torres hit, let's go back. Brent Seabrook apparently made the trip to Vancouver today and is questionable officially for the game on Thursday night in Vancouver, Game 5. What are your thoughts on the Rafi Torres hit behind the net the other night against Iran, Brent Seabrook?
Well, you know, I'd love to get your opinion almost first, but I go back and forth, and here's my take on it. Seabrook saying that he hit him in the head. I saw a couple different angles. It's questionable, you know, whether he did get hit in the head or not. That being said, the fact that the subject even had to come up with Rafi Torres, who was probably on his fifth shift after coming off a four-game suspension, there's plenty of ways. I understand you got to make contact. You got to hit Seabrook there. But, you know, if you're dumb enough to do something that's even questionable, hey, you should be suspended for two games for being an idiot. I don't, you know, like I said, I saw from a couple different views. Seabrook said it definitely was a hit to the head. I think it was a stupid play that could have completely changed the outcome of that game. The momentum and everything. Obviously, the Hawks not able to, kind of change the momentum and ride that energy to victory. But I think just the fact that we had to talk about it, and it's Rafi Torres, he should have been suspended. But you know, that's my take. You know, you should have gotten a two-game, I'm an idiot suspension, and moved on. But
I think the fact that he was coming back from that suspension, and it was – see, here's the thing, that the league really has to address, because what was Rafi Torres doing there? You know, he was looking to separate Brent Seabrook from the puck, okay? But he was looking to do it in a violent manner. He had a large head of steam coming up. It was a timing play. In essence, it was no different from the Nicholas Jongerson hit on Jason Pominville, in that Rafi Torres is trying to time the arrival of the puck at Brent Seabrook's stick. And when it does, and again, this is a timing play, and when it does, he will then lower the boom on Seabrook, looking for the highlight reel collision. You know, his stick isn't on the ice. He has no intention of playing the puck. I think he did not get the elbow up. He never left his feet. And, you know, that's a gray area, you know. I mean, shame on the NHL for having a rule that has a gray area in certain, you know, in certain places on the ice. But I think in my, you know, this is one of those things where I do believe that Rafi Torres should have been suspended for a game, because this is a guy who went, I mean, he went behind the net, and he went at Brent Seabrook with bad intentions. And he was just coming off a suspension for doing the same damn thing. So he should have gotten a suspension. But, you know, people calling for his head and saying, like, it should have been all, you know, five-game, four-game. You know, he never left his feet, and he didn't raise his elbow. It just so happened that Seabrook was in a really bad position on the ice. There's a lot of guys, and there are going to be a lot of hits. There have been. They're going to be going forward where, you know what? You know, a guy changes levels at the last second, you're committing, you're the hitter, and you've committed to a hit, and the guy, because it happens in hockey, you know, all the time, every shift, you know, every second on the ice, a guy is changing levels. And if you've committed that hit and the guy changes levels at the last, you know, second, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Again, Rafi Torres, he's got to, you know, what the NHL needs to do is they need to implement a rule on checks and to eliminate that hit, the kind of hit that Johansson tried to put on Pominville, the kind of hit that Torres tries to put on Seabrook there. And I think the only way that you get around that or you eliminate those hits that are that vicious, you're not going to eliminate those hits, but that violent of a hit, the only way that you're going to eliminate it is just clearly state you have to be making an attempt to play the puck there. If Rafi Torres has his stick on the ice and he's attempting to play the puck at the same time that he's attempting to separate Brent Seabrook from it, that's nothing. Maybe Brent Seabrook gets a bit of a collision. Maybe he falls down. But the viciousness of that hit that creates the whiplash, or there is the shoulder or a portion of the shoulder pad that catches Seabrook on the head or the chin, it doesn't have that same force behind it, because when Rafi Torres is coming in there with his stick off the ice and he's throwing his weight, because he's not, you know, he doesn't need to use a stick because he's just throwing, or he can't use a stick because he's throwing all of his weight into that body check. If he has to have his stick on the ice and he has to make a play on the puck, he can't put that kind of force behind that collision. And I don't think that that injury happens. So, that's what the NHL needs to do. They need to eliminate this separate the body from the puck mentality, because that's where a lot of these hits are coming. The Rafi Torres hit on Jordan Eberle. That's what's happening. And I think that's where you need to start. You know, you can go in there and you can knock the guy off the puck, but you have to be trying to play the puck as well. Rafi Torres wasn't trying to play the puck. He was trying to put a hurting on Brent Seabrook. And those are the kind of hits that need to be eliminated, because those are the kind of hits that do damage to people. So now my level of confidence that the NHL would do something like that, zero. But that's what's happening. We should talk about, you know, Dave Bolin comes back from being out 5-6 weeks with a concussion caused by an elbow from Pavel Kubina. And Dave Bolin comes out, and he kind of let Kubina off the hook, but other Blackhawks didn't. You know, of course, none of the fans did, and you wouldn't expect them to. And nobody should let Pavel Kubina off the hook. It was a dirty play. Well, what was it, Dave Bolin's third shift after coming back from the injury? What did Dave Bolin do? He wound up in the box for what? Elbowing. So if you're going to talk, you're going to say, well, Rafi Torres doesn't get it. Well, does Dave Bolin get it? Brent Seabrook, his buddy Duncan Keith, comes out after the Rafi Torres hit and is screaming and hollering about Rafi Torres is a dirty player and that's a dirty play and this and that. Did you watch Duncan Keith play last night?
I did.
Duncan Keith needs to settle the fuck down.
He's an angry man.
He is a maniac, and he's lucky. See, here's from a Blackhawks perspective. The Blackhawks in the third period are up 5-6 goals at one point, right? And they're running around like crazy dogs, specifically Duncan Keith. Duncan Keith was very lucky. 2 minutes left in that game, he tried to do the same thing that Torres did to Seabrook behind the Blackhawks net. It was off into the corner, but the puck goes into the corner, and he's trailing the play, and LaPierre's in there. There's already two Blackhawks in. Keith's the third Blackhawk coming back in. But Keith was anticipating the puck was going to come off the corner and towards Max LaPerriere's stick. or LaPierre's stick. So Duncan Keith, go back and watch this. I want everybody, if you still got it on DVR, go back and watch this. This is the kind of guy that Duncan Keith is. Duncan Keith takes a leaping, flying elbow smash attempt at Max LaPierre. He misses, thank God. And Duncan Keith nearly takes a header into the end boards doing it. And then he comes off. He skates to the front of that. Now go back and watch this. The referee, Danny O'Rourke, in the middle of the play, skates into the Blackhawks' crease and tells Duncan Keith to settle the F down. If you go back to the first period, Duncan Keith, after Boland's elbow penalty, the Blackhawks kill that off. Or no, actually didn't kill it off. Excuse me. Dave Boland's elbow penalty. Vancouver ties the game, 1-1. Not even 2 minutes later, Duncan Keith and he puts a good check on Rafi Torres, who's trying to bring the pressure on the forecheck. Duncan Keith does a nice job. He angles him good body contact, and the play continues into the corner. Duncan Keith gets his stick up. I think they called cross-checking. It was really a high stick. You know, I can give Duncan Keith that one. You know, that was I just said, okay, accident. Duncan Keith skates out in front of the net and then takes his right skate and just leg trips Yannick Hansen in front of the net. Duncan Keith already knows that he's going to the box, and he leg whips Yannick Hansen. He's lucky he didn't get a penalty for that. Like, what's going on in this guy's mind? You come out, you get the 1-0 lead. Dave Boland takes a stupid penalty. Vancouver ties it. And then you take a dumb penalty and then try to take another one? Come on. That's your Norris Trophy Award winner, the great Duncan Keith. All right. Anything else to add from this game?
No. Game. I think we touched all the bases I was looking to touch on.
I'll say this from a Vancouver perspective. I want Mason Raymond back on the wing. And if that means scratching Rafi Torres, I'd do it. You know, if that means bringing Cody Hodgson back in to play center on that third line with Hansen and Mason Raymond on the one side, you're not going to mess with the Ryan Kessler line at this point. Maybe you'd put Raymond on the second line, drop Higgins to the third. I don't know, but line combinations weren't Vancouver's problem. It was their intensity. It was their focus. But I like Vancouver better with Raymond on the wing instead of at that center spot in that third line. And, you know, if you can't trust Rafi Torres, that game three could go very differently because of Torres's, stupidity. And the Blackhawks could have won that game. So, I mean, if I'm Alain Vigneault, you're going home, you got the home ice advantage. You're kind of concerned about Roberto Luongo right now, both health and mentally. Everybody in Vancouver should be concerned about Alain Vigneault, but this is a must-win game. You can't risk a guy like Rafi Torres running around. The referees are going to focus on him. Sit him, bring Hodgson back in, move Raymond back over to the wing where he's best at, and go with that lineup. Because I think that's a better lineup for him. Coming into this thing, I like Rafi Torres a lot on Vancouver just because he brings that nastiness, that physical intensity, gets under people's skin, but he's also a good player, works hard both ends of the rink. But, the way this series is drawn out, I think they're better off scratching him and moving Raymond back to the wing.
While we're on the Vancouver Canucks, and not right now and tonight, but one of our future shows going forward, do you know what the overall outlook of the Vancouver Canucks is as far as their cap and what's coming up for free agency for them?
No, I can look at it real quick, though.
No, I mean, it's interesting to look at it, is the turnover that the Blackhawks have had and seeing the depth that Vancouver's added over the last year. It'd be interesting to find out who and what they're going to be able to keep from this year going forward.
Well, I think they're actually in pretty good shape for next year. I mean, they're going to lose guys like, Rafi Torres, Chris Higgins, Tanner Glass are the forwards that aren't under contract for next year. Higgins, Torres, Glass, all UFAs. Yannick Hansen, going to get a raise. He's an RFA. Max LaPerriere, you could probably let him go. He's an RFA. But Bieksa, he'll get a new deal. Salo, they'll let him go. Ehrhoff needs a new deal. I mean, yeah, it's a lot of guys. Yeah, I knew about Bieksa and Ehrhoff, but yeah, Salo's. I mean, you don't re-sign Salo unless he wants to sign for next to nothing because he doesn't want to go anywhere else. But you can't trust him to stay in the lineup. But I mean, I can't imagine that they'll let Bieksa go. Not after watching this series, no way. But we'll talk about this another time. Probably should mention, we talked about what are the Blackhawks' chances coming back from three down in a series. It's only happened three other times, most recently last year, Philadelphia losing the first two in Boston. So similar to the Blackhawks, then coming back and losing again at home. So the Blackhawks in the same position right now that Philadelphia was in, trying to come back down 3-0 in a series. Time that had happened before then, 1975, the Islanders came back on Pittsburgh, and then in the 1942 final, Toronto coming back on the Red Wings. So there's your stage set. Do you want to get to these over-under analysis?
Sure.
I think there's a reason why you want to. All right, so back.
I show my geniusness.
You have a hunch. Okay. I don't mind. I don't think I did very well in this thing, just looking at it right now. All right, so to set the stage here, back in before the season started, it was a show that Superstar and I did with Dieter Kurtenbach, and we came up with this thing where I guess it's a gimmick that one of the Chicago sports radio stations, so we stole it from them. Mac Yurko and Harry. Am I correct, Superstar?
You are.
Okay.
They were the originators.
Looking for
some justification or confirm.
Yeah, brief confirmation there. So we made nine over-under wagers. Blackhawks related with one ex-Hawk being thrown into the mix here, and we'll go through them right now real quick. First one that we made, Blackhawks total regular season points. We set the line, and I thought this would be a little high at the beginning when we set this, but we set the line at 103.5. I said that they'd go over that, so I said I think I actually had them at 104. Dieter went over, and Superstar, you are the winner because the Blackhawks finished with 97.
I knew it sounded a little high back then.
Hey, if they let's see, the three games, 97 is 103. So yeah, if they beat the Devils and those two games against Edmonton at the beginning of the year, they finished with 103 points. And if they hold on to that that ridiculous game where they were up 3-0 at the end of the first period in Dallas, back, what was it? It was Valentine's weekend. if they would have held on to that victory, they would have ended up with 100. If they at least pushed overtime in that game, or won one game, pushed in overtime another, they ended up with 104, 105.
You know, and think about how big of a difference we could be talking about now with the playoff series if they would have done those things, because instead of facing Vancouver in round one, you have probably a lot more favorable matchup, and we could be talking about the Hawks being up 3-1 in the series.
Well, I don't know about that. Not the way they played in the first couple of games, but yeah, if they would have finished, Detroit finished with 104. So if the Blackhawks finish, you know, they'd either be playing Anaheim, Nashville, or Phoenix. So, yeah, I mean, those, you know, I mean, the games that I always point to is the first game in Dallas. I mean, you could call them out, too, for the second game in Dallas in March where they skated short a guy because they didn't want to, you know, because Stan Bowman didn't want to call anybody up. So they didn't want to carry an extra guy. It would have been tough by the time they knew that they needed another guy, but they weren't carrying anybody else. And that was an enormous game at the time, and it ended up being an enormous game in the end. But yeah, I mean, those are it's the three games at home at the end of October, beginning of November, to Edmonton and New Jersey. Those were in a row. Those are three consecutive home games. The second Vancouver home game on December 3rd, when the Hawks just blatantly just didn't show up. And everybody's just like, oh, no big deal, no big deal. And I said, no, this is what this team is. And then, yeah, in the game that they allowed Dallas to come back and win. Yeah, they'd be a lot different. All right, let's continue on here. I'm going out of order, but Marty Turco regular season shutouts. Now, I don't know who set these lines, Superstar. Marty Turco regular season shutouts. 6.5, over, under. Block had under. Dieter had under. Superstar, you went over. So you were wrong because Marty Turco had one shutout.
I was wrong.
So just a little bit off the mark there with that line.
Yeah, and you know what? Nobody could have foreseen Corey Crawford taking the reins and taking over as quickly as he did. So we won't blame you too much for setting the line at 6.5. At the time, it sounded right where it should be.
That was a line set by the internet message boards right there. 6.5. I'll tell you something, though. I did foresee something happening along the lines of what did, because we had Corey Crawford, regular season starts. Line was set at 21.5, and this goes in conjunction with the previous one, because Dieter and myself went over. You went under it 21.5. Corey Crawford more than doubled it. He went 55 regular season starts, 27 in a row to finish the season. He got that net Thanksgiving weekend, and he never looked back.
It's not good when I take under on 21 starts for the whole year, and he finished with 27 consecutive.
Yeah.
Oops.
All right. John Scott. We didn't talk about John Scott from last night.
No. God, is that guy worthless?
Evan BX is taking turns punching Blackhawks in the face and face-washing guys, and John Scott he pulled his best Adam Burrish last night. There's no other way to put it. He wanted to fight Tanner Glass. Tanner Glass said, no, that's stupid. I'm not going to do that. So John Scott had to, you know, he went into theatrical mode and had to make a big deal about how Tanner Glass wouldn't drop the gloves with him. Meanwhile, his teammates are getting mauled in the corner. That's what you pay for right there, John Scott.
You know, I you talk about doing the showmanship. Did you see Patrick Kane act like he got shot at the end of the game?
You know what? Go back and watch the replay. The kid is some kind of special because he never lost his mouthpiece. It was dangling out of his mouth, his trademark. He got punched in the mouth, went down like he was shot, never lost his mouthpiece.
So I'm nominating him for Academy Award right now.
You know, I talk about the Blackhawks sometimes. You know, you want to believe they're just tough guys that go out and do their job and they're likable and, you know, they're not dirty, they're not chitter-chatter, you know, guys that taunt people. You know, you want to believe they just go out there, they work hard, and they play it straight. You know, last night was not a good night from that perspective. Okay, John Scott, regular season fighting majors set the line at 9.5. I went over. You, Superstar, and Dieter both went under. It finished at 8, so that's a win for you and Dieter.
Close one, though. Good, nice line setting on that one. Really close.
Yeah. These lines, someone else can. We're going to have to employ another bureau next year to set these lines. Victor Stahlberg, total games played with the Blackhawks in 2010-11. Set the line at 54.5. Superstar, you were the only one to go over. He finished with 77.
I had a hunch.
It was close there for a while.
Yeah, he was. You know what? I wish he had the production of somebody who played 70-some-odd games. Because, oh boy, that was disappointing.
The things I like, you know, I've said this and written it a few times now. I think that, you know, if he were to just accept, you know, reality and be a part of a fourth line, what you want out of your fourth line, your bump line, in most cases, you know, the fourth line will come out and play, you know, the shift after a power play, the shift after a penalty kill, because, you know, and at least in the Blackhawks anyway, every, you know, their top three lines are filled with guys that are penalty killers as well as power play. So your fourth line, their shift is going to come in situations like that after a penalty kill, especially, and they'll be matched up against the other team's fourth line. What you want out of your fourth line is you want some players that can separate you from other teams' fourth line. What fourth lines around the league can you look at and say has a guy with the kind of wheels that Victor Stahlberg has? You know, I mean, they're
not many, if any.
Yeah, so you know, if you're trying to form, you know, if you're Sam Bowman and you're trying to formulate a fourth line combination for last year, or at least I won down, you would like Victor Stahlberg to be a part of it. You'd want a guy like Ben Smith. Pencil a guy like Ben Smith or Rob Klinkham you know, I don't think Ryan Johnson's coming back. I don't think Jake Dowell's coming back. But, you know, you want a competent center iceman. You know, the thing about, you know, Ryan Johnson and his face-off prowess is just, it's like completely overblown because, again, he's a fourth-line center. What fourth-line center is going to be out there in important situations taking defensive draws? The focus should be on Dave Bolin becoming a better face-off guy. Jonathan Toews already is. But when you really need a face-off win, where is it coming from? I mean, who's going to be out there? It's going to be Toews, Bolin, Sharp, or whoever the new second-line center that comes in. Those are the guys that have to be good at face-offs. Your fourth-line guys, would it be nice for the guy to be 60%, 63%? Of course it would be. But what you really want out of that fourth-line center is just a guy who's average. You can get by with average because he's just going against the other team's fourth-line center anyway. And unless he's going against Scotty Nickel, who probably won't be in the league next year, I mean, how many great face-off guys are on another team's fourth line? Would you like to have that? Sure. But you don't overpay for it. Like this year when people were pining for Zenon Konopka from the New York Islanders. Like for what? So he could come to Chicago, take stupid penalties, be in the penalty box, and not be on the ice taking face-offs? You know? I mean, the one thing he's good at, he'll never get on the ice in an important situation to do. And now watch Dan Bowman sign Zenon Konopka. All right, so we did Victor Stahlberg. Chris Burstein. Now, I had a hunch all along that there was going to be a good chance that Chris Versteeg would be traded before the year was over. He was, but I didn't vote that way. this is why things go so wrong in Vegas. I set the line, but Chris Versteeg, regular season point total with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So if he got traded, whatever happened afterwards would not count. Somebody, and again, I don't know who did this, somebody set the line at 66.5. I went over. Dieter went over. Superstar, you went under. Well, guess what? Chris Versteeg got traded after 53 games, and he only had 35 points. So you are the winner, my friend.
I didn't see him. Do you know what he ended up with total for the year?
No, well, it's not much more than 35 because he didn't do anything for Philly down the stretch.
And you know, you could have taken the season total, and I still would have gone under. So, you know, that's just because I don't like him.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes left here. Blackhawk team power play goals. Now, this line was set. This line wasn't so bad. Again, my pick, not so good. Line was set at 58.5 power play goals. Of course, the Blackhawks had, I believe they finished with the third best power play in the league. They had 64 power play goals. Superstar, you were the only one that won this one. Again, over for Superstar, and you win that bet.
Yeah, and you know, I think I don't remember, but I think they had some ridiculous. So that power play was pretty solid all year, but it was very sporadic. And I think it like a little over the halfway mark, they were well on the way to being at the line. So they obviously came out and jumped up early on that one. So I felt pretty good on that one, even going into, you know, the All-Star break.
Yeah, Blackhawks finished with the fourth best power play in the league percentage-wise, but they had the sixth most power play goals. So Vancouver was first in both categories. Okay, we only got one left here. We already determined our winner, but we'll get to that in a second. The wager was Duncan Keith regular season ending plus minus. Wait a second here. The line was set at a plus 27.5.
Whoops.
I think
someone in Vegas missed this one.
I think that was a practical joke. We all went under, and Duncan Keith finished a minus one. One of the worst follow-up seasons for a Norris Trophy winner in history, Duncan Keith.
He may be the worst Norris Trophy winner in the history of the game.
Well, for this season anyway. We'll see what happens going forward, but for this season anyway, he should be embarrassed. Well, Superstar, you indeed are the winner of the 2010-11 over-under wagers, defeating us soundly, Dieter and myself, 6-4.
It was, you know, it was fun to do, and it was fun to track throughout the year, and, you know, we'll hopefully bring it back for next year.
And hopefully we'll have someone with a brain set the lines.
Yeah, hopefully the lines are a little closer. You know what? It was fun. Like I said, it was something different to do for us, and I think it went well.
All right. Will Marion Hossa score a power play goal ever again? Or a playoff goal?
A playoff goal, yes. A power play playoff goal, no.
So what do you think? The next time that we talk will be, well, here's the deal. If there's a game 7, we'll have to do a show on Monday. If this thing ends whether it be Thursday night or Sunday. We'll do Monday. I guess we'll just do Monday. How about that?
Yeah, we'll do, you know what? We'll just do Monday. We'll make it easy.
Yeah. What I want to do is for the summer. We should talk about the summer here real quick. I do want to get out of here, but I want to set a day during the summer for us to kind of roll through. It doesn't make any sense to bounce around if there's no schedule, Blackhawks schedule anyway. But, yeah, we'll do Monday night, April 25th will be the next show. This summer, Superstar, and I haven't talked to you about this, but you're literate, so we can go ahead and, you know, you don't need much advance warning. This summer, what we're going to do on the show is, I mean, we won't do entire shows based on this, but what I want to do is we're going to read books, and then on the show, we will discuss the books.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, because I've got, like, I'm very much looking forward to this season being over, because I have a stack of about 20 books that I'd like to read before next season begins, and they're not all hockey books, mind you. Like, you know, we could talk about, you know, there's mixed martial arts books, there's wrestling books, we could do the Artie Lang book.
Yeah, I heard Artie's coming out with another one as well, so.
Not dead yet.
Not dead yet. You would know more than I would. Is that out yet, or is it still in the works?
I don't know. I know nothing about pop culture. I didn't know until last night that the Bulls came back to win on Saturday. I was flipping through the channels during the Red Wings Phoenix game on Saturday afternoon, and I went to, I don't know what ABC is, that what you know they're on?
I don't know.
I flipped to it, and the Bulls were down 5 points with 30 seconds left. And then I flipped the game on again, whatever night they were on again, Monday night. And I saw the graphics that Bulls lead the series 1-0. I go, how'd that happen? So I asked one of my friends, I said, you know, how did they come back and win? And they were like, how did you not know that? It's been the talk of the city. And they go, not the city that I'm around.
Yeah, not the Northwest Side.
Yeah, if I went outside or turned on the TV, maybe that would happen. Been a little busy. All right, Superstar, thanks a lot for coming on, joining us this week. Enjoy the rest of your 420.
Yeah, you do the same. You'll have a nice German brew for me.
All right, thanks everybody for listening. Once again, it's amazing that you continue to listen. But as long as you do, we'll come back and do it again next Monday night, like I said, April 25th, 8 o'clock here at blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin, and also at thethirdmanin.com, and also on iTunes, in the iTunes store. Search podcast for The Third Man In, and you'll find us there. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I don't know if the switchboard's working. Should probably figure that out. Let's try this. Fingers crossed. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.